Ryan, Homefield Apparel just doesn't miss, man. The premium vintage licensed apparel now comes in a corduroy hat, but also a heavy tee. They are hitting all of the fall trends for your Gopher fan or your college football fan in your life.
And that's the beauty of Homefield Apparel. They always come out with these new, unique things that you're not going to find in and around the Twin Cities. It's stuff that you're going to be excited to wear to the tailgate next week against USC when you have all day to tailgate, and people will be looking and saying, where did you get that cool hat? Where did you get those heavyweight tees? And you can tell them, I went to homefieldapparel.com. So I want you to search around the site, whether it's Gopher Apparel or now you're a huge fan of Eastern Michigan because that's who you use on College Football 25. You'll find something you like, and when you get to checkout, Luke, use promo code GG24. That is the two letters GG, the numbers 24 at checkout to get 15% off your first order.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to It Almost Happened. The comeback of the century comes up just a flag short, if that's not a good little prelude there, as your Golden Gophers implode early, which seems to be another theme for this season, and end up losing in a ferocious comeback, 27-24 to the University of Michigan, the 12th ranked team in the country. Luke, we are recording this on Saturday night afterwards, and I'll tell you, with a little bit of time for it to sink in, this team, I can understand why it makes a lot of people so angry, because I just don't know what they are.
Yeah, first of all, let's put some qualifiers out here. You're sitting in a hotel room in Michigan. We're
right next to the airport. You put me in such nice accommodations, Luke Buer, which I should also note, I have met a few different lovely couples here that are loyal Gopher Gridiron Radio listeners, and I want them to know we appreciate you more than you know. Thank you for coming up and saying nice words. And I even told Luke Buer that some people do indeed like you.
Oh, it's so flattering. You did message me, and I said, hi, guys. But yeah, in general, like we've got you in a hotel with probably some janky Wi-Fi, maybe some airplanes going over. So if this sounds a little bit different than our normal shenanigans, you maybe know why. But you know, we wanted to chat and get something out there. We weren't able to connect on schedules with Derek. Maybe Derek and I will do something on Twitter or something like that. But yeah, we wanted to break this down as soon as we could. And I'm excited to just talk about this, Ryan. It's a very interesting game. And frankly speaking, it's somewhat emblematic of a lot of the games we've already watched this season.
Yeah, it certainly is, where this team just cannot figure out how to play 60 full minutes of complimentary football, just full incomplete football, where you have the special teams blocked punt, but you also have Coy Parrish with 82 punt return yards. Yep. Then your kicker misses a 50 yarder. Theirs doesn't. Your offense does nothing in the first half because they continue to shoot themselves in the foot at every opportunity. And then defensively, the first drive, you commit an egregious penalty where Jalen Logan Redding goes with a WWE slam. And then eventually it's a wide open 27-yard touchdown. You bow up, but then you get put in a tough spot because of your defense and an offensive turnover. But then you can't force a field goal. I'm telling you, Luke, I understand why this team might be addicting for people who like their heart rate to go up and down, whether that's because of excitement or whether that's because of anger. It is just, you never know what you're going to get on a drive. And that's why I would imagine they're now 2-3 and have lost 7 consecutive Power Four games.
All right. So let's talk about this 24-27 loss to Michigan. This is a game that again sees one half where the Gophers play really frustrating to poor football, and a half where they play some really good football, especially in the fourth quarter. And you know, they come up just short. You know, there's this old adage in some sports, especially basketball, when you get down early, you have to expend so much energy, you end up just running out of energy at the end and can't quite finish the job. In this situation, the Gophers were unable to finish the job, maybe in somewhat a part because they ended up getting called for an offsides on a phantom offsides. Well, maybe it's not worth like digging into terribly much, but I do find it interesting. And maybe the thing that's most gut-wrenching about it, Ryan, is that they not only recover they recover it in like basically in field goal range.
Yeah, they recover it at the Michigan 38 yard line, but it just gets nullified because of the look. Here's what I'll say, and I tweeted out a still shot of it. And again, that's one angle, it's not directly on the 35 yard line. But Luke, my opinion is this, and tell me if you agree or disagree. In that spot where there is 97 seconds left in the game, if you're going to throw a flag for offsides there, it has to be absolutely egregious, and it can't be without video evidence. What I mean by that is if Matt Kingsbury, who I believe was the Gopher called for being offsides there, he has to be like 3 yards offsides to the point where if you go back and watch a replay and you're like, oh yeah, well, yeah, without question.
Yeah. I think the thing that's so challenging in that play is that I think technically by the rule, there's basically a vertical plane, right? On the yard line. And to that point, it's objectively clear that his foot has not crossed the line. It is unobjective. Like, it's not objective whether or not he crossed the plane because of the camera angles and whatever else. But also, like, we're debating like 6 inches, right? So like,
and that's my point, yeah, is
it's like
if let the players decide the game at that point, yeah, where if you're going to throw a flag, it better be an absolute, without a doubt, bona fide flag. And that's my issue with the whole thing, is whether he was offsides by a half yard or onside, just keep that piece of cloth in your, yeah, in your hip. Like, just let the players decide the game. Nobody came to watch the stripes.
And it's not like the Gophers got the ball back and had an opportunity to, you know, drive themselves into field goal range, and then instead throw an interception. You know, these are totally different circumstances. So I don't know why we're going to pit them two against each other. But, you know, just generally speaking, like, the Gophers had no opportunity because of this flag. So, you know, point here and
you get
there.
The ball back. Yeah, if the sideline judge, or whatever the referee is there that is called, he was the guy standing directly at the 35-yard line. I know I've seen some other conspiracy theories of, well, did he throw it after the Gophers recovered because the Big Ten has a fix in to make sure Michigan gets to the college football playoff? I tell you, I've gone back and watched it numerous times. He threw that thing instantaneously, which almost makes me more mad because he was so bleeping sure in himself. In himself. That he was like, yep, offsides. I cannot fathom watching that live and thinking, yep, it's such an egregious offside with less than 2 minutes left that I have to throw this flag. But what do I know? I'm not one of the stripes.
Yeah, I don't know. There are a number of, and they go both ways, right? I'm just like, I think at one point Derek and I often message during the games. I at one point said, they're just struggling to spot the ball right now. Like, there have been a couple of spots that were like just egregious both ways. They're on one of the Gopher touchdowns. I'm pretty sure the Tyler Cooper tackled a guy, right? Like,
and he absolutely, I know exactly the player. Look, it's not just Minnesota who missed calls,
right,
or had calls missed against. Yeah. There are a couple of different offensive linemen where I remember watching it back on Fox and it's, oh boy. Yeah. I mean, he looked like he's to your point, there was a few tackles missed, even the Max Brosmer fourth and short sneak.
I don't think he got it.
Oh, I think he easily got it, but like, that's where, yeah, that's what I thought. But
okay.
I mean, we're debating semantics at this point, but I, go ahead.
No. What about the Calarop catch? I don't think he caught it. I think
a better view of that one. Which also, by the way, that's the most athletic thing I've seen out of the, I don't mean this to sound so negative,
Yeah.
I didn't think Nick Kallerup had that in him.
He ripped it away. Like, it was a great play, but I didn't think he caught it. And then the other one, I definitely don't think that on the interception that Max threw, that the guy was in bounds. Now, you know, they reviewed it, but and didn't have enough evidence to overturn it, but I didn't think he was in bounds.
That whole sequence there bothered me, by the way, where I actually thought that was a pretty good ball by Max, and I would love to see your all Big Ten receiver.
Yes.
Play that like an all Big Ten receiver. He drifted to the sidelines, mm-hmm. oddly, and then that put the Michigan corner in a spot to be able to go get it. But to your point, there wasn't an angle that I saw that made me think if that had been called incomplete because he was out, that they could overturn it.
Yeah.
So whatever that they had called in the field, they had to let that one stay.
Can we just get all of the officiating out right now? Because I just want to, like, we don't normally talk officiating, but we kind of opened this can of worms. The Daniel Jackson touchdown, like, I understand that you're trying to pull your flag out, but he had 3 feet and a knee in, and you called him out.
It was certainly a choice, is what I think my mother would tell me. That was a choice you made, certainly. I mean, and as crazy of a circus catch as that was, and he's able to corral it in a pirouette because the Michigan DB held him so bad. How about that effing throw, though?
Dude.
By Max Brosmer.
Yeah.
Where if there wasn't PI, that would have been just an absolute dot. And it still was. But yes, I don't understand how you watch that live. All you had to do is take one look at the replay and, like, yep, that's going to be overturned immediately.
Yeah. I don't know. And then the other, the other one was when PJ did call the timeout to challenge the spot. Like, we can argue
the first timeout of the second half. Yeah. I know exactly the play you're talking. Like, he was absolutely irate on the sidelines.
I thought the video, I watched the clip and I was like, oh yeah, he's good. I'm going to run to the bathroom. Like, we're going to get this and we're going to move it back. And then they didn't. So was it really that close? Like, I don't know.
I thought it was clear that guy it should have been second and I think 13 instead of second and 9. But
yeah, but you lose.
I'd also say speaking of Fleck, by the way, I should tell you about my interesting journey to even get to the press box. And I think some listeners would appreciate this.
Okay.
Or to the the visitor press conference room. So we're up fifth floor at Michigan Stadium. And to get there, oh, by the way, everything was delayed 20 minutes after the game. Can you guess why? You remember who was attending the game?
Governor Walz.
Governor Walz was there. So they had to get he and his security team and his motorcade out of there, which delayed both press conferences. So once Andy Greeter and I from the Pioneer Press were able to get down to the concourse level, we had to scale down all 59 rows. Okay. We hopped over onto the field. And we had to run across Michigan Stadium field because we're already late.
Yeah.
Because of the wall situation, because they shut down the elevators from the fifth floor. Sprinted across the field, sprinted up the tunnel to then get in there. I didn't have me running across the 50-yard line at Michigan Stadium on my, I think I might get to do that today. But because of everything after the game, some memories were made, Luke Buehr, I'll say that.
Yeah.
So this leads me into where I was going with this before I get sidetracked.
Yeah.
What did PJ Fleck think of the officiating in general and specifically the offsides call? Well, I'm so glad you asked because that was our first question to him. As he was saying that, Mark Coyle sitting in the back. And here was his thoughts about the call. And I quote, I mean, I haven't seen the last play, nor does one play win or lose you the game. Everybody's going to focus on that. I'm not going to sit here and get fined and do all those other things. I have more respect for my boss, the University of Minnesota and the Big Ten, to say that's one play. But I'd also say he then leads into this quote, I haven't even seen it, but we got it. And it was executed really well.
Well, okay.
So go ahead.
Let's just talk about onside kicks in general, right? Like, for an onside kick to be successful, you basically want to be as close to being offsides as possible so that you can get up and either blow a person up or, you know, meet the ball, you know, as it crosses the 10. And so I thought they executed it basically flawlessly with the exception, obviously, of being offsides.
I agree. And so when asked of Mr. Fleck, what did the refereeing crew tell you? I mean, we're all dying to know. Mm-hmm. Here's all he said about that. Quote, the call was made. I asked about it. And he said he broke the plane. Those were the words that were quoted. End quote.
Okay. I mean,
the man who can talk you in circles for 15 minutes without saying anything,
yeah,
was very short, concise, and to the point with those specific thoughts and feelings.
That's goofy.
It is goofy.
Okay. Are we done with officials? Because I really don't want to talk about officials anymore.
What do you want to pick? Offense, defense, or special teams?
I think we start with defense. Okay. I actually thought the defense played pretty decent. They ended up giving up 27 points on the day, in large part aided by early turnovers that, you know, hurt them. Obviously the block kick is included in that as well. But short fields is where Michigan had success. Alex Orji, while very athletic, they somewhat dared him to throw, and he didn't have a lot of success. They turned it into one turnover. He was 8 of 18 on the day. Rushing completely, they carried the ball 43 times for 155 yards. But yeah, in general, I thought the defense played pretty well and did a lot better with that running attack than I thought. Yes, they gave up some big runs at times, Ryan. They gave up the 27 yarder to Mullings, but like they did pretty well.
I don't know what, like, defense is in this game, and it's, to be fair, the defense did technically give up all 27 points, but they were put on short fields a couple of times. I understand that. It's a weird day to try and evaluate them to me, because that Michigan offense stinks. Like, they are worse than Iowa's offense in 2024. I'm telling you, they are.
Okay, so let's think about it this way then. In this game, at least for me, you knew they were going to run the ball, so you had to try and take away that identity. I think you did an okay job of that. I think the thing that was frustrating, and you maybe didn't hear this, but Joe Klatt was on it, especially late. I thought it wasn't even just late. It was throughout the game. Like, think about the first 3rd and 10 scramble from Orji.
Don't get me going about how Alex Orji scrambled for two different 3rd and 10s. That were first downs. Minnesota does not spy the quarterback.
No.
Who doesn't want to throw the football. They were both bizarre to me.
And they played quarter sticks. Like,
man, it's like you were playing against, say, Max Brosmer. And what I mean by that is you didn't think he was a running threat. You didn't spy anybody.
Right.
You're like, he's going to just throw to the sticks. Alex Orji is 6'3", 235 pounds, and as Ja Joyner said on the record to the media after the game, I mean, he's a running back playing quarterback,
yeah.
Which tells you everything that Minnesota's defense thought about him. But regardless, you allowed him to extend drives because of some interesting defensive calls. I would even say on that opening drive, I think Michigan was 2 of 2 before they burst off that long run.
Yeah.
I think with the defense, is it improved from last week? It looked like it. I mean, there's some things you want back, specifically when you have these sudden changes where Mark Crawford gets a punt blocked and Daniel Jackson has it ripped away from him, which, if you want to talk about when did Daniel Jackson stop his forward progress, and there should have been a whistle, maybe.
Or how about when was his forward progress up? There, this is the big difference, and I've noticed between college and the NFL, and I think it's hard for fans. In the NFL, that would have been blown dead 2 seconds before the ball ever came out, right? Because if they get players injured or whatever on that kind of play, but in college they really do let that go. Why I'm not entirely sure. Because I don't think there was any kind of advantage for Jackson other than for Michigan to strip it away and fumble. But yeah, that was interesting. The other thing I wanted to say,
but I would tell you,
go ahead.
You get two sudden change opportunities, yes. Where, yeah, it's a tough spot. You're deep in Michigan territory. They have it first and goal, or at least in the red zone. And neither opportunity you were able to bow up and force a field goal against not a very good offense. Now, that's my gripe. And it's being very picky, but in a game like this, every point was going to be at a premium.
Yeah. The one for me that bugged me a lot, like, okay, the Gophers score that touchdown. They're down 24-10, right? They get Michigan to go 3 and out, right? And they basically dared them to throw it. And if memory serves, they ran it 3 times. Yes, they ran it 3 times. We're basically,
and then Jalen Logan Redding on that 3rd and 1 just swims. I think it was the left guard and plants him on the ground.
So the Gophers go score a touchdown next. Then the next drive really bugged me, Ryan. Just really bugged me. 14 plays, 58 yards, 6 minutes and 32 seconds off the clock. And yes, they threw a couple balls, but for me, it's just like, I would just say, okay, let's play like man free and just like force them to beat us, right? We're just going to stack the box so much, and either they're going to pound it down our throats and like outman us, or we're going to let Alex Orji complete some balls against man coverage. Cause I just wasn't convinced he would do it. And they kept playing that zone with the 2 deep safeties and not rolling them up.
I will tell you, and I wish Derek was here for this. I think what Derek would be telling you right now is the way that Heatherman does this thing, where Joe Rossi was Mr. Sound, Mr. Conservative, we're going to be in the right spots. I think Heatherman is trying to play this more aggressively in spots, but I would also tell you that's going to lead to some interesting decisions.
Dude, but that wasn't aggressive. That's the thing.
Right. And that's what I'm kind of saying is, if you're going to be Mr. Risk Reward, why would you change your MO on that drive when your offense is finally awoken now?
Right.
Some of that was because of the pride of Esco finally did something in terms of the punt return game. Yep. Not talking about Coy, just the punt return game in general. They finally do something. Your offense, after just scoring a touchdown, gets another one. Ball game is flipped. Even though PJ Fleck may tell you he doesn't believe in momentum, the momentum was Minnesota's side.
He's so crazy. Like,
and that's where, when that drive starts with 11 minutes left, the one you're referencing.
Yeah.
And it's just a soul sucking 14 play drive that ends in a field goal. 6 minutes come off the clock. That's kind of been my gripe about the second half defense all season.
Mm-hmm.
Is, I know everybody laments, well, Ryan, the offense only had 4 plays in the 3rd quarter against North Carolina. Or Ryan, they only had 5 plays against Iowa. Well, somebody is running plays somewhere, and that would be your defense that is struggling to get off the field in big spots and big opportunities. And to your point, that is one where you would have liked to seen them boat up.
Yeah, I guess I...
Especially when you knew all they wanted to do was run.
Yes, and I think you're reinforcing my point here. I don't know that it was so much an execution problem as much as like... play chess, and if you pick wrong, I'm okay with living with that. But it like, they weren't playing chess, right? That's the part that was frustrating to me. Yeah, because this is now Minnesota's going to play arguably a very good offense next week against USC, where they've basically, this defense has not played a competent throwing team yet.
No, they haven't, which is scary. And it's also the reality that now you're going to be in your 6th game, which will mark the halfway point, and you haven't played anything. I mean, if you're looking at Corey Heatherman right now, you're going to be going from playing a team that just played a lot of 12 and 13 personnel, a.k.a. 2 and 3 tight ends, to next week. You're going to be going against Miller Moss and Lincoln Riley, who are going to be 4 wide, if not 5 wide, mm-hmm. and they want to throw the ball 45 times. You can't get any more. I mean, you're going from a 1960s offense to Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting. And I'll say this, I really hope Justin Wally is back for this game against USC, because if he's not, we are in for, I don't know what we're going to be in for at that point.
Okay. Let's just highlight some bright spots though on the defense, because there were some bright spots.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Ethan Robinson was really good again. He has been a bright spot.
He has
all
been
season.
The best. He's been the best player on the defense, and at least in the back seven, because I think I thought Jod Joyner played well, and I think he's played well, even though the statistics aren't going to tell you in terms of sacks. I just think of the number of plays that he has disrupted that have resulted in a negative play for the offense or a turnover. Mm-hmm. I know the stats aren't there, but I just would tell you, I think he's playing really well. To your point, Ethan Robinson going up and being able to rip that ball away from Colston Loveland, who is mm-hmm. going to be an all Big Ten at the end of the year. He has been very consistent. And I'd also tell you, I know that you, in our group chat, you were a big fan of Maverick Baranowski before he went down. And mm-hmm. I don't think he returned after his injury, which is unfortunate because
yeah.
I think he's been playing well. But I'd also tell you, I thought Cody Lindenberg played well. He played every snap.
Yeah.
All 62 snaps, I think it was. And then Pro Football Focus had him graded as an 85 tackler, which was the highest overall tackling grade on the Gopher defense.
I'm glad that reflected in the stats because I thought that Cody tackled a lot better in this game.
Yep.
Yeah, that's good that reflected. What did Maverick end up? Because I thought he didn't look great in pass coverage, but he run coverage, I thought he did pretty well.
That's going to be the theme. If yeah. you, when I release these PFF grades, or if you've got a PFF subscription, you can go check them out. But you also go over to Gopher Illustrated Sunday morning, and I'll have them up. PFF was not a big fan of Minnesota's tackling. I think they had the Gopher defense with 14 missed tackles. And that was a lot of players on the defensive line and in the secondary, which I don't know how many yards after contact Khalil Mullings had on his 181 yards and 2 touchdowns, but it certainly felt like he had to earn every part of them. But unfortunately, on some of those runs where you meet him in the hole, he grinds forward for the extra 3 yards to get the first down, when if you can just stand him up or push him back, that could have been a big, big part of the game.
I think you said 181 yards. He had 111 yards.
Excuse me, 111. Yeah, it's been a day here in Romulus.
Yeah. All right. Otherwise, defensively, Jalen Logan Redding had a couple flash moments. He also had the penalty, which was tough. And then I think the only other thing I wanted to mention defensively, Devin Eastern, really on a couple of different times, a couple of times ate a couple double teams really well, especially in the second half. I liked that. So any other,
I also tell you, it was interesting. Yeah. The only other parting thoughts I got about the defense is Winston's defensive line rotations were very interesting against Michigan because essentially they only played 2 defensive tackles the whole game. And that's where Devin Eastern and Jalen Logan Redding played 90% of snaps, which is the highest snap share either one of them have had all season. And that's where they brought in Logan Richter for one play. But other than that, it was mixing in Anthony Smith inside to spell those two. It's interesting that they have gone from a 6-man defensive tackle rotation at parts earlier this season to now they don't feel comfortable in that type of set going with anybody besides those two, which
yeah,
I don't know that you can get away with playing those guys 60 snaps a week, but good thing the bye week's only 2 weeks away.
Yeah. All right, let's catch a quick break. We'll talk a little Gopher offense. We'll talk a little Gopher special teams. We're probably going to skip the Big Ten, mostly because it's not done playing. Heck, one game hasn't even kicked off yet. So we'll catch this break and we'll be back. Ryan, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group is supporting Gopher Gridiron Radio, but more importantly, they are supporting Dinkytown athletes. Again, if you are looking to buy or sell a house and you want to make a difference in Gopher NIL, or you just want to support your favorite Gopher team, make sure you reach out to Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. They will help you. They will take 1% of the sale price and give it to the team of your choice, or you know, maybe even the player of your choice. I don't know. You get to work that out with them. Definitely a great way. These are experienced real estate agents. So how can they get a hold of Team Dinkytown, Ryan?
Well, you can go to 2 if you want to online, check them out. Check out their website at teamdinkytown.com. That is all one word. Or you can give them a shout today. They love to talk with you on the phone at 612-250-8562.
Ryan, insurance is something you have to have. Pretty much it's a necessity in this day in life, whether that's your home, your auto, your ATV, your boat. So maybe you're packing up your boat, or you're going to be getting out your ATV for the hunting season or the trail season. You should think about reaching out to your local insurance agent, an independent insurance agent at the Burns Insurance Agency.
They are licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you are not a local Gopher fan and you're thinking to yourself, I want to support somebody who is an independent, a Gopher fan, and I know I'm paying too much for my home, my auto, my boat, my commercial business, my ATV, whatever it may be, check them out online today at insurancebyburns.com or email them bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk about when the Gophers were on offense, Ryan. They amassed 24 points and 21 in the fourth quarter against arguably one of the best defenses in the country. And let me tell you, I got one word for this Gopher offense going forward for the rest of the season, Ryan, and it's tempo.
Yeah. This offense is so maddening. And what I mean by that is they just can't get out of their own way. And specifically the offensive line. PJ Fleck doesn't want to hear me ask, right? He is tired of me asking him about the offensive line, but the reality is the biggest thing in the way for this offense to actually find consistency and actually find an opportunity to score more points is the offensive line just has to stop shooting themselves in the foot. Five more penalties. They now have 15 penalties per Pro Football Focus. Through the first five games of the year, they had six, all 13 games last year. They just keep shooting themselves in the foot. And that's where this offense, I look at the first drive of the game, second and six, Minnesota tries to throw a little crossing route to Frank Bierman, a tight end that they have. He drops it, sets everything back. They have to punt. Second drive, you have, I think it's Tyler Cooper gets hit with a hold. It's first and 16. You're not going to go anywhere against Michigan's defense when it's first and 16. Next drive, Greg Johnson has one of his two flinches up front. It's first and 15. They just can't get out of their own way, Luke. And it's so maddening because you will have quarters like they did the first 40 minutes of the game where they can't string anything together. They have flashes here and there, but they just can't do anything. And then they have a fourth quarter where they score 21 points. I told you this in the pre-production meeting, but your Golden Gopher offense, this is not going to seem like a real stat, but I looked into it. They are the first offense to score 21 points against Michigan's defense since 2018 Ohio State. I mean, if that ain't a fifth, like TCU came close in the bowl game. They scored 20 in a quarter, but Gophers scoring 21 points in a quarter wasn't on my bingo card this week, but that is the Jekyll and Hyde nature of Greg Harbaugh's offense right now.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. As I watched this game unfold, I kept thinking to myself, man, I really think that Greg Harbaugh is finding a way to, you know, put pressure on this offense, or sorry, on this defense.
Be careful. If you speak any glowing words about the offensive coordinator, I learned this today from the X machine.
Well,
people are just going to rip you into oblivion.
Well, this is where I kind of am going. I was thinking like, man, they're doing a good job of working in some screens. They're kind of keeping them off balance, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then I'd go on Twitter and it was like, oh my goodness, everybody thinks the play calling is horrendous. Maybe I'm completely losing it. You know, like
it's unpopular, Luke. I just tell you,
is it convenient to just blame the play calling? Because I think you outlined pretty clearly here, Ryan, that there were times that execution was just flawed, right? And then they'd get behind, you know, they'd get behind the sticks too far. Like, I don't know if it was such bad play calling.
I had no issue with the play calling. I had issue with the execution, which those may, while they both fall under Harbaugh's umbrella, they are different issues. And that's where people don't want to accept that. But here's what I'll say. I think the most perplexing thing of what is a very odd and strange 2-3 record, the way they got there, I will say, is I cannot fathom why this offensive line continues to just shoot themselves in the foot with penalties, and they continue to just play so inconsistent, which plays a huge part. And turns out, Luke, as I talked about in the preview episode, this wasn't the game you were going to find the running game. And that's where Your three running backs, Darius Taylor, Marcus Major, and what was your favorite? Jared Mangum gets one carry for 16 yards, looks really good on it, and then gets injured and never comes back in moment.
Yeah.
They ran it for, I believe, 60 yards on 15 carries. I don't even think it was that. I think, how do I want to phrase this? If this offense is going to do what I think a lot of people want to see them do, which is you saw in the second half that the offensive staff and Max Brosmer talked about it after the game. They know how much they have stunk in the second half of games. So one of the things that they wanted to do was go with a little bit more tempo, especially because they couldn't run. And they found a lot of success doing so. And that's where, if I were Greg Harbaugh, and I am not, would I go with more tempo consistently? I would, especially because I can't run the ball. But the question I have isn't necessarily Harbaugh's line of thinking. It's, do you think PJ Fleck will allow him to just completely abandon the run outside of goal line and short yardage? Because, folks, the reality is this. I just said it earlier. The sixth game of the season is next Saturday. That's the halfway point. Whatever preconceived notions you had about this team, the reality is you now have 40%+ of the data points for this year. And they are going to tell you that Minnesota cannot run the ball with any sort of consistency. So why wouldn't you, as you did today, by the way, give Darius Taylor just targets in the run game or in the pass game? He had 10 receptions, Luke.
Yeah.
He had 10. And so I went over to your favorite SID, Carl Anderson, in the press box, and I went, I can't find this anywhere. Do you have single game running back reception anywhere? And he does not, but he will look back into it. Here's a blast from the past. I can guarantee you haven't heard this name of, or a Gopher fan has not heard this name in probably 16 years since this happened. The last Gopher with 8 or more receptions in the game as a running back, DeLeon Eskridge.
Oh,
if that didn't awaken a brain synapse somewhere in the deep part of your mind.
Yeah, that's back to the Burster days.
It is. Back in 2008 against Ohio State, and Darius had 10 today. I would imagine that's the most receptions a Gopher running back has had in my lifetime. But the point I'm trying to draw here to is, it's okay if you can't run the ball if you just use Darius in the passing game as an extension of the run game.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, do you think PJ Fleck will allow an offensive coordinator to abandon the run as such, as I'm trying to hint at, where you're still going to run it enough, but you're only going to run it 15, 20 times. Now, if you find more success on the ground, then absolutely go back to it. But do you think PJ Fleck will allow an offensive coordinator to do as such and essentially translate this entire offense to, we're going to be a tempo passing team? Because that's the question I have.
So the best we've seen of Max Brosmer is when he's played up tempo, right? Most consistently. I think we've seen him struggle and the offensive line struggle as they drop more. I think that most of the receivers have proved, especially against zone, they're good at finding soft spots and sitting. Can you answer a question for me? Did Jameson Gears go and then end up not going the rest of the game?
He was used very sporadically. I was actually very surprised he played.
Okay.
I was listed as questionable coming into the game. I talked about in the preview episode, I heard he was dealing with a little bit of a hamstring injury. I believe he only played on 7 snaps.
Okay.
So I don't know if he did indeed re-injure it or if they are being very careful with his snaps, because if you couldn't tell by the TV, it was raining and or misting the entire game, in a hamstring injury or just soft tissue injury in general on a slick surface,
yeah,
isn't exactly the conducive environment to not have it be re-injured.
Yeah. Yeah. So in general, I think that we should try and use more tempo. But I think this totally goes into the, it contradicts PJ's identity of wanting to shorten games, right? You have the opportunity basically to stop the clock more. You also have the opportunity to put the ball in harm's way more often, not just by throwing it, by actually having to protect the passer. Balls can get tipped. That's a continuing somewhat of a continuing problem that we see Brosmer and the offensive line get into. It's, I think they've had one tipped in just about every game so far. All in all, Ryan, I think the recipe for success for this team is to continue to play with tempo and pace.
Like I said, it's what I would do. I would, like I said, I would abandon the run.
And I wouldn't abandon it.
But I would abandon it out in between the 20s and outside of short yard situations. But I will say again, if you find in a game, so say hypothetically next week against USC, Darius Taylor and Marcus Major are averaging 5 yards a carry, then by all means,
go for it.
You hammer the run game. But I think what I'm pleading for is, will the offense be willing to pull the plug on the run game earlier and earlier in games going forward if it's clear that it's not going to work? Now, I know some people were not happy with Brosmer again, and I'll just tell you, when he was kept clean,
he's good.
Which is a very difficult task against Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant, which is why Michigan's defense had 8 tackles for loss and 4 sacks in the first half. But you saw in the second half when the offensive line shored some things up. Now, that's not to say that Max Brosmer wasn't on his keister a time or two, especially in the final few drives of the game. But you can see the ability and the processing that he finishes the day 27 of 40 for 258 yards, a touchdown, and that pick on the sideline, which I'll say again, I want my all Big Ten receiver to play that one a little bit better. But I don't understand the people who continue to just say, well, we need to put it in somebody else. And I'm thinking to myself, is he going to tell the offensive line to block better? Because that's the only thing I would take from this game was you saw Brosmer get happy feet again when the pressure was consistently getting to him, felt like in the second and third quarters. But I'd also point to, that's every college quarterback you ever watch on TV outside of about 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you think that putting in Drake Lindsey as a true freshman in the Big House would ever be a move that you should ever possibly make? And that's where, if it's up to me, like I said, the remaining 7 games, I'm designing this thing around 16-1 instead of 1-16, if that makes sense, where I think you got to go forward with Max Brosmer in that passing offense, and you have to use Darius Taylor, which I wonder if I'm going to see any people in the media after this game talking about Darius Taylor got 23 touches in this game. Like, that's exactly where he should be. He shouldn't be getting any more than that. That's plenty of touches for him. But it's just the maddeningly inconsistent penalties that continue to put them behind the sticks or untimely drops. I mentioned the Frank Bierman one on the opening series. We also almost saw a Max Brosmer interception where he checks it down to Darius Taylor. It slips through his hands, hits him square in the face mask, deflects up into the air, and is almost picked off. And I almost went, I might just leave the press box if that would have been an interception, because that's how you know it's not going to be your day.
Yeah, but it also was almost a completion to Spencer as well, right? But yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's frustrating to see kind of the inconsistencies. I'm interested to see if this is going to continue to be a function of transfer quarterbacks in general, right? Getting acclimated to a new team, to a new system, etc. I'm not putting blame on Max in this situation, but I have noticed there has been more success with teams that have incumbent quarterbacks, right? That have come back. And there have been more instances where, you know, the new quarterbacks have struggled some. And I think there is kind of that gelling and maturation. You just have to live it on the field sometimes.
Well, that's even where you look at this team in general. You're 2-3, and you've had a lot of change. I mean, you've had a change at quarterback. You've had a change at defensive coordinator in his first year. You've got now Bob Legaszewski running special teams. Greg Harbaugh's only in his second year. So maybe one of the things that we take away going forward is, especially when there is a lot of change at the coordinator positions plus quarterback, maybe you should lower expectations a little bit.
All right. Let's see. Otherwise, offensively, just to highlight some great plays. We already mentioned on Daniel Jackson that pirouetting catch, an incredible play there. I really liked how they used one of the play calls really early. There is an orbital motion that they then ran a running back screen on. I thought that was really a beautiful play design, and got a way to get Michigan, you know, kind of flowing in multiple directions. And I really like just the use of running back screens as well. And I thought that I also thought that the offensive line did a better job in, at times, Ryan, of getting out into some of these screens, even for wide receivers.
How many years have people been screaming into the ether at me, at you, at this podcast, at the Gopher coaches, wherever they may try to find them? Why don't you use the screen game? And I believe in this game, Minnesota executed six different screens, whether there was a, to your point, the orbital motion with Darius Taylor to have everybody flow left. They came back, threw it right to Marcus Major for 13 yards. You saw some tunnel screens. I think that's an area that if I'm Greg Harbaugh, I see us have success today running screens, and I would hope that I keep that page in my playbook going forward, especially if you're going to do less in the running game. Now, I will reiterate again, because I know I'm going to get the emails or the messages. With the run game, folks, I'm going to reiterate two things within my thought process with the whole quote unquote, as I said, abandon the run. That's not to take it out of the playbook in short yardage situations, say third and fourth down or in the goal line, like you saw Darius Taylor plunge in for 3- and 4-yard touchdowns. But to Luke's point, you're going to have to become more creative, as we saw today, and they tried to be a little bit more creative with two back and some orbit motion and just some different things. If you're not going to have a run game, you're going to have to diversify the passing game to make up for the run game. And a great way to do that, if teams are just going to pin their ear backs on the passing game, that's where the screens can become more involved. And to your point, I thought the offensive line did a pretty good job on that.
Answer me this. I don't know, but did you see that the Gophers had 1.97 online yards per carry this game? Is that the best they've done all season on O-line yards?
I don't know that answer off the top of my head, but I would tell you I don't think that thinks what you believe it is, because coming into the game, they were at 2.69 line yards per rush,
okay,
so which was 105th in college football. So if you're telling me today they were sub 2, I'm going to tell you that 105th in college football is going to go even further down.
I kind of had felt like they had been sub 2, so I was surprised that you said that. Okay, I didn't know that they were above 2.
I'll rerun the numbers, but I'll tell you this, and I think this is where I want to continue to beat home the point. I don't know why the offensive line is where they are. I don't know why they struggle as much as they do. I mean, Greg Johnson now has 4 flinching penalties, and call it a false start, call it a flinch, call it whatever you want. I would tell you it was interesting after the game to hear Fleck kind of talk about it may be disconcerting signals that aren't being called. Now, I have no way to verify that. I'm not down on the field. You're not down on the field. Heck, he's on the sideline, and I don't know what he's being told, and maybe that's true. And if that's so, then you're going to have your umpire be able to do a better job with that. But 4 penalties in 3 games on the same thing. I didn't have high expectations coming into the year for Greg, just because new position for him, trying to make sure that he can run the entire offense is a tall task. Mm-hmm. But those penalties are just killer. They're just, like I said, 5 penalties in total for your offensive line today. That is a number that almost, as I said, the offensive line had 6 penalties all of last year in 13 games. They had 5 against Michigan alone. That number has to be cleaned up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, on the day, just to highlight some counting stats here, if we just haven't gone over them, Ryan, I want to make sure we throw some of these in. Brosmer was 27 of 40 for 258 yards. Ryan, you remember when PJ said like 70% is the goal for completion percentage? He was darn near at 70% today. He's been darn near it a couple times this year. Like, have been impressed with him.
And that's with two really bad drops that would have put him over 70%.
Yeah, for sure. And then some just from a receiving standpoint, Elijah Spencer continues to play pretty well. Six receptions for 67 yards. Daniel Jackson had 7 for 58 in that miraculous touchdown. And then Taylor had the 10 for 52. And then I saw a little bit of juice there from Christian Driver on one reception. Would like to see him get more involved. I know he's young, and I know he had like an early mistake earlier in the year, but definitely no one has the speed he has in that receiving core.
I'd tell you, there was a play, and I can't remember the specific play, other than Max Brosmer ends up taking a sack. And I remember watching Christian Driver come out of the slot, and Brosmer's looking to him on his first read. Driver just completely runs into the nickel and like runs over him and falls down.
No.
And so then Brosmer a half second later gets the pressure in his face, and it's like, well, the end result is Max Brosmer taking a sack. Well, the result, how do we get there? Christian Driver can't just run straight into the nickel and fall down.
Yeah.
But yes, the shot of speed there is certainly there. I think Elijah Spencer is more shifty than I thought.
Yeah.
You continue to see him try to make moves in tight windows, and he's had success at it. I think the last play I want to talk about offensively is one that leads us into the special teams talk. Why did PJ Fleck call a timeout on 4th and 11 from the Michigan 37? All I can think about now in hindsight, and it's always going to be 2020, and I understand that.
Yeah.
Is imagine PJ Fleck would have had that timeout in his back pocket after Nick Kallerup skies up for the pride of the Lake Conference, Wyzetta's own, like he's going up to get a rebound against Hopkins, comes down on the 2-yard line or 1-yard line, whatever it was, with 2 seconds left. Yeah, imagine if PJ didn't burn a timeout on 4th and 11 to kick a field goal.
Yeah.
I couldn't fathom the timeout at the time. And he said after the game, he was thinking about going for it. In what bleeping world are you going for it on 4th and 11 against Michigan from the 37?
Yeah.
Now, the result, not great, as Dragon Kesich misses his 5th field goal of the season. And this is my concern, is all 5 have been right. And to me, maybe this is just me being biased. I mean, I'm the last person to try and give you an objective opinion on special teams. I'm fully self-aware of that. But when all 5 misses are to the same side, if he would have missed 1 or 2 to the left, I'd honestly feel better. But the fact that everything continues to be, and I believe I'm going to say this correctly, guys, I'm really trying. I don't understand things. He's pulling them to the right. I believe that's the correct, and I'm sure, Luke, did I get that right? Please tell me.
Let me think again. He's left.
He's a lefty. Yeah.
Yeah, so to the lefty to the right. No, he'd be hooking it, I think.
I know someone else just side with me. Folks, Luke, I kid you not. I think I've gotten 12 emails over this.
No, yeah, I think it is a pull. I don't know, because I'm right-handed, so I think about it incorrectly. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Like he's pushing over to the right.
And am I off base? And this is a complete mind game that I'm playing with myself here, and I'm sure he's playing it with himself too.
So
if you would have 1 or 2 misses to the left, I would feel better that it is what it is. But the reality is you've now missed 5 field goals in 5 games, and that is a problem. Now, I understand 3 of them are from 50-plus, but I don't know. It's also death taxes, and the other team's kicker turns into Martin Gramatica.
What a blast from the past.
You like that pull? It's a good thing nobody celebrated and torn ACL.
Yeah.
But you had the opening game where North Carolina's kicker wins the Lou Groza Award of the Week for the best kicker in college football. Well, Dragon misses 2. So it compounds upon itself. And then today against Michigan, their kicker nails his 50-plus yarder and yours misses. And then at the end of the game, you look up and it's 27-24. Let's go back to the original statement though. What is PJ Fleck doing? It's year 8 and you're calling a timeout on 4th and 11 to deliberate if you should go for it against that defense? In what world, Luke?
I think I'm not entirely sure that it was like the deliberating as much as they just weren't ready to run anything. Right?
Why? Like you should have the field goal team ready to go.
Yeah, that's the piece that I don't understand. Like
the play before, it was I think 3rd and 8 and they tried to run a tunnel screen and I think it was Elijah Spencer didn't get out on the tunnel block. He tried to stock block and the corner came up, met Daniel Jackson, it was a tackle for loss. You should have had the field goal unit ready to go. All I could think about that entire halftime was if you would have just had your timeout, because then Minnesota calls it bonsai, where you saw their entire, they have practiced this for 8 years, and this is really the first time I can remember
it being
that they actually enact it in the game where they, I've never seen 300-pound men sprint so quickly to get to a spot. And that's where somebody else brought up to me, and I'm pretty sure they'd be right, Luke. Did we talk about it in the group chat? If Michigan would have tried to do a substitution, the time would have just ran out, right?
I think, yes, technically, once the ball is spotted, and because Minnesota substituted, Michigan could have substituted, the clock starts to wind on the subs once the ball is set.
So if Sharon Moore would have had the wherewithal, Minnesota substituted personnel, then in theory, you could have had a late sub. Again, I think I might be, as the kids would say, and I wrote this afterwards, I don't know if you've heard this term, but it continues to, for whatever reason, continue to pop up in my feed. The kids would say he didn't get galaxy brained enough. I don't understand Zoomer terms. I'm still catching up on all that.
Me neither.
But I will just continue to say, I wish Fleck wouldn't have burned the timeout on 4th and 11. Save it. And then you could have used that to potentially gone for a touchdown, because it really felt like they just tried to get points before the end of the half to say they scored, which if we're in year 8 of moral victories, what are we doing? But think about how the game could have changed there.
Yeah, I think you're definitely correct. It's frustrating, but the timeout was gone. So it is that it is. And in that circumstance, they did the best that they could. I think, let's go back to Dragan for just a second, okay?
Yep.
The consistent missing, it is a problem. I think the other thing that is frustrating and a problem, or not a problem, but was last year he was so good, Ryan. I don't think anybody expected him to be, from a percentage standpoint, as good as he was, especially from deep, right? He ended up, didn't he end up being like 16 for 18, only missed 4 kicks all year or something?
Correct. He only missed 4 kicks all of last season, and now 5 games in, he's already missed 5.
Yeah, so my point being, you know, there's that. The other thing is, if he's missing consistently to the same side, it's something with his footwork, or it's something with timing for me. As you know, we've talked about, I did kick a little bit in high school. I don't claim to be a kicking savant by any stretch of the imagination, but when kicking, timing is everything. And one major difference from this year to last year is there is a new snapper. So that is going to be something to get used to. I would think by this time you'd have it figured out. And then the other thing, he's missed 350 yarders. I don't put as much on him on missing 50 yarders, but obviously the longer the kick, the more exaggerated any English you're going to have on this. And so, you know, if you're not straight on from your aim point and it's drifting on you either direction, it's going to be exaggerated by the distance. And that's what's frustrating. So one, I think expectations were too high, and I took the bait. I drafted him first in our annual draft, and I put a ton of pressure on him. Once again, I will take the blame for this. You know,
send your emails and messages to where, and what's your home address as well for letters.
Yeah.
Smart decision. There you go. Yeah, smart decision.
I'm not going to share that. I have conversed with Dragan a few times because of Dinky Town Athlete stuff and trying to help out there. And
he's one of the best kids you'll ever meet.
He's great. And it's ticking me everything not to text him and be like, I'm so sorry I drafted you so early. Did it put any pressure on you?
That's what makes it kind of tough. And that's part of the job where it is 18 to 23 year olds, but and the Athletic ran a great story about him earlier this week, but it's also you're a kicker and you've missed 5 kicks. And that's a big problem for this team, where last year he was 8 of 10 from 40 plus. And this year, I believe he's 3 of 7. That's a problem, man, because if you can't count on your kicker late in games, I'm not here to tell you that, you know, Drugan missing the 50-yarder was everything in this game, because it wasn't. But their kicker made the 50-plus, yours didn't, and you lost by 3 points.
Yeah.
Like, it played a part in it, which is also why, Luke, I know you're a big game on paper guy, and even in a game where Coy Parrish is finally unleashed and he gets 82 punt return yards on 2 punts, Minnesota had a negative what EPA in special teams?
Let me look again. I think it was minus 7.3.
This team, man.
But I think I do think that includes obviously the block punt, but it also includes the, I would assume that it includes the offsides penalty, which was huge. Did you see, by the way, on Game on Paper, the offsides penalty that swung the winning percentage 66%?
I believe it.
Yeah.
Which is why you had the penalty that took away your recovery, but you also had the penalty on the Mark Crawford block punt where you had another illegal formation, which that would have been their third illegal formation on a punt in 5 games, which is fireable. But why don't we stay positive here, Luke? I have been waiting since Wisconsin of 2018 for the Gophers to do something in the punt return game.
Did you stand up? Did you stand up?
My heart was a flutter.
Yeah.
I had to find the AED machine to make sure that my heart was still working. I had to look at Randy Johnson next to me and say, you're going to have to use this on me. It turns out, Luke, that when the Gopher return team actually blocks someone, Coy Parrish is not afraid, and he is one of the most dynamic Gophers you are going to see in the return game. What did you think of the pride of Esko?
Oh, I mean, it was great. You got to give some guys credit too. Like Derek Hapton had a great block on that return. You know, I think
Evan Redding had a good one.
Oh, did he too? Yeah. I mean, there were a couple good blocks, and you know, Coy is not going to blaze past many, right? But that's quick and sudden movements and his ability to set people up and then make them miss. You can see in that kind of return, it is set up for someone with that kind of ability, like he has, you know, in a phone booth to make someone miss. And yeah, I'm excited to have him there, obviously, for the rest of the season and you know, maybe even more going forward.
He is a very powerful runner, is what I would also say. Yeah, he can make a man miss, and he can make you miss in a phone book, but he is just a very powerful kid in general. I think that's something that I didn't take under consideration as much. But I mean, just a huge play to flip the field 60 yards, allow your offense to get a short field, and they capitalize on it. And that's where, on the flip side, what do I have to do to get Coy Parrish in blocking on kick return? Because I believe what my eyes told me, and I know it was at least true on the first one. So Coy Parrish tries to return 2 kicks. I think in total, the kick return team loses, I believe it was 18 yards on 2 returns. And it's not Coy's fault, because the guy who made the tackle both times was unblocked all the way down the field. How does that happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I saw in the group chat you messaged that. Obviously, we don't get that that angle, but yeah, it's a real bummer that they weren't able to, you know, at least get a body on some of these guys.
And then we also have to talk about the Mark Crawford block punt, where Michigan lines up with significant personnel on the right side of the formation. Mark Crawford is designed to kick to the right, and there's multiple guys that come through and are able to block it, and that's just a killer.
Yeah,
it was. It's just an absolute bona fide killer. And if that play doesn't happen in that game, I think the game is very different. But that was part of that second quarter sequence, which featured, I think, an interception, a punt, a immediate touchdown on the next play, and that's, you know, we can get to that here in a second, but just their inability to stop the bleeding when they start bleeding is truly remarkable on this 2024 team. But that block punt, Luke, just can't happen, and it continues. There's just different things every week, Luke. You know, they keep me on my toes, that special teams unit, those pesky boys.
Yeah, they It was, again, frustrating on special teams. At least it was a little bit more Jekyll and Hyde this week, Ryan, as you wrote.
That's
progress, actually. Right? Like, that's actually some progress, which was nice. You want to hit anything else on special teams?
I enjoy the return game, and I want to give the return game their due because I've been asking for this relentlessly for year after year after year. I'm excited for the punt return team. I genuinely am. But when you have the kicking issues that you have, and you have a blocked punt, and you have kick return just hemorrhaging field position, that's how you can have such a special play. That 60-yard punt return flipped this game in that fourth quarter, and it was awesome to see. It was awesome. But you just can't get out of your own way. And that's the story of this 2024 team.
Yeah, I think this is where you can see that the formula, if you're going to play to shorten games, like, you can build an advantage if you can be good on special teams. Because, you know, at the point of that return, the Gophers are down. They're down 10 to 24, Ryan. And then you get that huge return. You score another touchdown. Now you're down. It's a single score game, right? Mm-hmm. And that can always be the great equalizer of special teams. And when you consistently lose at special teams, or it isn't a net benefit for you, it makes it all the more, tight on both offense and defense when you're trying to shorten games. So,
yeah, I'm with you. I think we end with this where. I said it to begin the episode, and it's still true. You've lost now 7 in a row against Power 4 competition. I believe you're 2-10 in your last 12. And I just think about this 2024 team, and I asked Randy Johnson on the car ride back, and I'll pose you the same question. USC comes to town next week, and they'll likely be ranked probably close to 10th in the country at this point. Mm-hmm. What do you think would be more shocking for you? If the Gophers won or the Gophers lost by 30?
Oh, that's a tough question. For this coming week, won or lost by 30, what is more likely? Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of my point.
Yeah,
I don't know what to expect on a given week. It wouldn't shock me if they won. It wouldn't shock me if USC beats the brains out of them. And that's what's maddening about this team as someone who is in and around them every single day of their lives. And that's like, I understand I'm a very passionate person, Luke, mm-hmm. or at least I like think I am. But that's what makes this team so frustrating to cover on just a daily basis is I can do all the work during the week. I can talk to everybody. But when you finally get to the game time and those 3 hours of time that pass and 60 minutes on the field, you can have moments where in the second quarter, you absolutely implode on yourself. You start bleeding and you bleed everywhere in the room. Mm-hmm. And then you have a second half where on the road in the big house against the number 12 team in the country, you outscore them by 15. Or you think about the North Carolina first half. I mean, you're up by 7. You're up by 7 against Iowa at halftime. But then the theme of this team, and you can correct me if I'm wrong so far, is they just cannot play 60 minutes of complimentary football. And most importantly, when they start bleeding, when that stone, or in this case, when that snowball starts to go downhill and it's going from the size of a fist to the size of a basketball and it continues to gain speed, you know that thing isn't going to stop until it's the size of a boulder. And I don't understand why and it's not just one thing. Think about today. I mean, Daniel Jackson has it ripped out. Defense can't bow up. Touchdown. Mark Crawford has a punt blocked. The defense gets put in another tough spot. Can't force a field goal. And it's just a huge 14-point swing. Or the offense finally does something. They score a couple of touchdowns. The defense allows a 14-play drive that kills 6 minutes and they get points on it. It's just, they're so up and down. And I can't remember a Gopher team like this where
you have the highest of highs where they can play exceptionally well, but the moment that I feel like I need to figure out a new cliche or comparison or whatever it may be, when it starts to go pear-shaped, it just gets as wide as humanly possible.
Yeah, I think,
what do you think?
I think to that point, I'm going to push back on you a little bit, is yes, it can get pear-shaped and it goes south, but in this game, like, they didn't give up, right? They kept fighting, right. They kept clawing, and they were able to claw back. Now, you know, against Iowa, when it got bad, it got bad, and it got bad, 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 right? But that was the second half.
When it went bad this week, to your point, against Iowa, when it went bad, they just shut down and it was bad, bad.
Well, but I mean, Iowa deserves credit too, but yeah. Also, like, this is the second half where, you know, I don't think they gave up in that game per se, but it snowballed quickly and then it was over, right? It was like there was no way they were coming back. And part of it was because they never got a rhythm going on offense in that second half too. And again, it's complimentary football. But here in this game, it's like, you know, you're down. That field goal, albeit, you know, you missed the timeout, it did help kind of springboard them a tiny bit, right? It gave them a little life or a little hope. And then they were able to get things going and they just didn't give up. They could have just sat on it, Ryan, in this game. And it ended up being like, you know, 31-10, but it wasn't.
And I enjoy the 15 point. You outscored the number 12 team in the country in their place by 15 points. And that should be commended. But I'm also just at a point where, you know me, Mr. Pessimistic, I'm Johnny Raincloud. I can't be sitting here talking about in good faith moral victories in year eight when you're on a 7-game Power Four losing streak.
I don't think anybody's saying it's a moral victory. I'm just saying that, like, Your point was when it gets bad, it gets real bad and they shut down. I was like, well, we also have evidence that they didn't shut down in this one, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it can go both ways. Like, you saw the fight. I think it's easy to give up, you know, and they didn't in this specific situation. Now they're gonna face adversity again, and it gives me confidence they're not gonna give in. They're also gonna face competent offense later too, right? And that's the thing we haven't seen, is can this defense stop a competent offense, especially a competent passing offense?
Offense is the key word.
Yeah, it's a key word. I'm not trying to throw shots at Michigan or Iowa with that comment. I just meant more so passing the ball, right? Like, in less of this, you know, we're going to pound it down your throats. And we know that's the weakness of this defense.
Do I also think this team is quote unquote due? I do.
Well,
I mean, I really do.
Like, they were due in the second half.
And you thought that this was going to be the break, and that obviously didn't happen, because I'm sitting here also conversing with you on Friday night watching the Rutgers Washington game, where Washington should have won that game by 14 points and they somehow found a way to lose. And how do you do that? 3 missed field goals. Fourth and, you know, you have a third and goal at the 2, play calling gets really iffy and you find ways to lose. And that's where I will continue to come back to this too. And you also can correct me if you think I'm wrong. I think Minnesota just continues to find ways to lose more than other teams find ways to win. I think those other teams are just taking advantage of whatever Minnesota is doing. And if Minnesota can just stop shooting themselves in the MF and foot, offense, defense, and special teams for a couple drives a game, I still think this team's capable of making a run, mm-hmm. But the key word there is capable. How much more time do you have to be capable of doing something when you're almost halfway through the season at this point?
Yeah, I think the thing that's hard is the middle of the Big Ten in particular has gotten really, really competitive. There really isn't like an easy game on your schedule from here on out, right? And the reality is, like, you can be Washington in that Rutgers game, and you can absolutely dominate them. Like, Harris Simiak was getting his lunch handed to him, right? They had 420 some yards of offense, but then they couldn't score touchdowns, right? And maybe that's the old Joe Rossi school of defense where you're like, we're going to bend, but we're not going to break. And they were able to do it. But the reality is they don't, you know, games aren't called by who amasses most yards. It's who amasses most points. Right. And I think that's frustrating. And this is, again, that's a great example of the middle is so tough. Like Washington is very much a middle team. Rutgers is very much, I think Rutgers probably regresses to the middle, even though they're 4-0 right now. They've had a couple games now, two games in a row now that they could have easily also lost. Right. So in Minnesota sits, I think, in this middle, and it's really muddy and mucky. Like it's not clear who the best teams are.
And I think the biggest point within those teams like Indiana, Rutgers, and I think there's another one that's escaping me that should be ranked. And I'm sure I'll figure it out here in the next minute or two, is those teams are finding ways to win.
Yes.
While your team is finding ways to lose. And I don't know how and the margin for error on that line is so, so thin. It always has been for this team. And yeah. I think it always will continue to be. But when you just continue to come up on the red side of the ledger and you're watching teams like, to your point, Rutgers win a game that I don't know that they had any business winning, but they certainly did win it. You look at Indiana, who's now 5-0. I mean, there are teams that find ways to win. And this was our qualm all of last year, Luke, was can Minnesota finally figure out a way to win? They found ways to lose games last year. You think about Northwestern and Illinois.
Yeah.
And now you think about North Carolina and Iowa and now Michigan. At some point, you just got to get out of your own way and you got to change. I mean, Fleck is huge on the entire change your best. Well, I tell you, it's offense, defense, special teams, and the head man himself. So if you're going to get out of your own way, I also think it has to start with the head man.
Yeah. One comment on Indiana. Like, the one thing you're not going to ever probably say about it in this Indiana team is they aren't aggressive.
I agree.
And I think
Cincinnati's got them playing very aggressively everywhere.
Yeah, and I think
they're very confident.
Yeah, and I think that very rarely do you create your own luck by being passive, right? You usually create your own luck by being aggressive. You can also create your own demise by being aggressive too. But I think more often than not, you're going to create your own luck. So, yeah, man, I don't know.
I just keep coming back to it. I mean, that fourth quarter was a really fun one to cover because you saw this team gain momentum. As I said, the offense puts up 21 points in a quarter against Michigan. First time that's happened since 2018 Ohio State. It's just they need to find a way to put it together for 60 full minutes. And when you play 40 minutes of really good football, but the 20 is historically bad in each one of these games, that's how you always continue to look up at the scoreboard and it doesn't go your way.
Yeah. So true. Okay. We'll be back to preview the game against Southern California. It should be an interesting preview because like we're going to have a very competent passing offense to go up against. And I'm curious to see, can this defensive line get some pressure and can these corners hold up and, you know, this secondary hold up?
We will also get back to talking more Big Ten. We'll have some more time.
Yeah.
As we currently sit here in time, there's a game going on still. And not every day that, at least here in Eastern Standard Time where I currently am, Luke, this game kicked off at 11 p.m. Standard Time.
Yeah, man.
In what world, man? In what world? But we'll be able to talk a lot more Big Ten next week.
Yeah, maybe I'll get a chance to get on Twitter live with Derek or something so that we can get his perspective. You know, schedules just didn't line up this time. Appreciate you guys sticking with us with that. Want to thank our sponsors, Home Field Apparel, the Burns Insurance Agency, and Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. Yeah, Ryan, it's going to be fun to talk some more football. Hopefully get this thing back on track. Again, thanks for listening, and go.